Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. As strong supporters of the American Kennel Club, we talk about everything from conformation to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between. Your passion is our purpose. Tremendous thanks to our sponsor, Royal Canin. Every day, more top breeders are choosing Royal Canin. Join the winning team. Okay, crew, before we get into today's show, I am super excited to tell you about something new here at Pure Dog Talk. We know breeders are the lifeblood of our sport. We celebrate and honor our master breeders. So we're bringing you Breeders' Voice. Breeders' Voice sits down with top breeders, sharing their secrets, how they got where they are, the joys, and maybe even the heartbreaks. If you haven't had a chance, click the Don't Miss an Episode button so you'll get these in-depth articles delivered free along with your podcast. Sign up on our Facebook page or at puredogtalk.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a super special guest for us today, Lori Morrow, formerly known as Lori Hatcher in an earlier part of her life, is 83 years old and has spent the vast majority of her 83 years involved in purebred dogs. And she has some amazing stories. So welcome, Lori. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I hope I can give you the information you're looking for.
Well, I think what we're talking about is you started as a teenager working on the East Coast. Is that right?
Well, actually, I started earlier than that with my campaign to get a puppy of my own. I was six. My parents both grew up in homes without a dog. And it's just like Ralphie and you'll shoot your eye out. Everybody told me, you won't take care of it. You'll get tired of it. And it'll end up being my responsibility. Well, anyway, I got a seeing eye dog to raise to prove that I could do it. See, yes. I was in Morristown, New Jersey. And I got a puppy. Well, it was the best I could do, but it was not the best choice because she was large and she'd never seen a woman. She'd never been in a car and she needed a lot of socialization. But I got my dad to take me to Madison Square Garden for Westminster. And then he went to his office with all the other daddies. And I look back on that and I think, my God, you arrested for child abuse if you left your 13-year-old daughter alone at the garden.
Probably true.
Unfortunately, times have changed and I had a wonderful time. Previously, I had saved my allowance and gotten my mother to help me order the AKC dog book. I have a copy in the bookcase and I looked that up, 1947.
Wow.
And then I have another interim one. And I went through all of that, and pretty soon I could recite all 114 breeds. My mother, I'm sure, was totally wiped out by that. And decided, from the information I got, that the Shetland Sheepdog was the perfect fit for me. And I was right.
Yeah.
I'd never even seen one. So I had, went to the show, and everyone was too busy talking to each other to pay any attention to this drippy little 13-year-old kid. So I just watched, and then I found somebody who was sitting alone with a for sale sign behind her cute little schnauzer, and she was happy to have someone to talk to. So I took my dad down afterwards because I wanted him to hear her story and how she had taken care of a dog and blah, blah. Mm. It was a long story. So she said, I have friends that have a kennel, and each summer they hire a young person for the summer. And I will tell them I have spoken with you, and I will give you their address so that you can write to them. I was ecstatic, and of course, I did it. And then when everything was prepared, I went down to my father's study and announced that I had a summer job and that they were going to pay me $50 and provide room and board and transportation.
$50 for the whole summer?
Yes, for me and my German Shepherd, because I knew the Shepherd was leaving in another 4 months. Mm.
This was your seeing eye dog.
Yeah. Yeah. And my father said, well, you know, we'll have to check into this. He was a very fair man, and I was his princess anyway. My mother cried a lot, and they went to our minister. We were very active in the Episcopal Church and both sang in the choir and everything and knew the minister very well. And he said, let me make inquiries, which he did, and stopped by to announce that the two middle-aged women who had combined their Sheltie kennels. What is God doing? It was a Sheltie kennel. Not only a Sheltie kennel, wow, but one of the leading Sheltie kennels in the country. They had just won the Nationals.
And which kennel was this?
Norlie Timberidge.
Wow.
Eleanor Mann had Norlie, and Dorothy Foster had Timberidge. And the leading stud, producing stud, of all time was Champion Timberidge Temptation. And he kept that honor until Peter Pumpkin came along.
Oh, wow.
But Peter Pumpkin had Bitches Flying In on the plane. To breed to Temptation, you had to drive to Zelianople, Pennsylvania, which my dad had to look up on the map and said, told my mother she's going to spend the summer in Zelianople. But there wasn't a boy on the property.
And so you were safe.
And these two old, to me they were old ladies, but they never had any children. So they treated me as an adult. And I learned to drink coffee and smoke cigarettes. But they were so good to me, and I worked my butt off. I was in charge of the puppy house, all the, not just cleaning poop, socializing, and leash breaking the older puppies so they could have a chance at a home. And they had about 40 dogs, and they could tell. We played a game after dinner, and I would go and bring a dog, and they would be blindfolded, and they could tell every dog in the kennel just by feeling.
Wow.
I was totally blown away. But, of course, I had no idea that they were in constant contact with my parents and told my parents that Lori really has a talent for wild animal care and training.
And you were 14?
I turned 14 that summer.
Wow.
And Eleanor also did obedience training. They had a small boarding kennel, and they had a number of people who would bring their dogs for their vacation and pay to have them trained while they were there. Well, Eleanor taught me all my beginning obedience training, and pretty soon I was doing all the training, and it was just great fun. And she was right there to correct me if I didn't do it right, if I wasn't rewarding. They were just fabulous. They were super, and when I went home, I cut school so I could spend time at the feed store where the local breeders all came to pick up their horse meat, dog food, and made friends with one of the gals that worked there who was single and had a Great Dane with a professional handler, and she took me to some dog shows. The Sheltie people took me and let me show a puppy a couple times.
Wow.
So, you know, I was all gung-ho, and the people that had the Danes, I won't say his name because everybody knows him, but he had a Dane kennel and he just handled Danes. Mm. But he also had a son who thought I was cute. And pretty soon we were dating. And it was a wonderful time in my life.
Now, you talked to me a little bit earlier before we got started. You said you lived your life sort of in 20-year segments.
Yeah. So I was in New Jersey.
That was in New Jersey.
Yeah. I was born in Philly, but my parents lived in Princeton, and then we moved to Maplewood, and then we moved to Short Hills. Then I went away to college because I knew I couldn't marry this wonderful man because he would be in the dog world, and I would not be allowed to show dogs because he was a photographer. And I would be home, probably raising children, and not allowed to show or breed. And I thought, much as I loved him, I couldn't do that. And he would outgrow me anyway. And there I would be. It was the hardest decision I made in my life, probably. So anyway, he married a very nice person and had a very happy life and named his first child after me.
Oh, my goodness.
I found out many, many years later.
Oh, my goodness.
That was pretty amazing.
So you went to college and got your first Sheltie.
I had my first Sheltie, and I got married the beginning of my senior year to, he was a veteran, he had been in Korea, and he was working on his master's in geology.
Oh, wow.
That was Hatcher. And we lived in student housing, and there I was, magna cum baby, when I graduated.
Magna cum baby.
Large wood. Not honors, but with the baby. And my old girl was getting old. And anyway, he worked for an oil company for a while. And then we had the Suez Crisis, and nobody wanted anyone to discover any more oil. They had tankers running all over because they couldn't even land them. And they told him, we're going to send you to the Kenai Peninsula in Alaska. And if you don't like that, you can quit.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, I didn't get married and have a family to go to Alaska and leave them behind, besides which we had friends that had done it. All of their savings were gone because the cost of living was so bad. And the company had paid to ship all their stuff up there, but they would have to pay to bring it back. They lost everything. And I said, no, honey, I'm glad you made that decision. So he went to Oklahoma and pounded the pavement with all the other PhDs and couldn't find anything in the field. And finally, I said, come home, because I was living in a second floor apartment with his parents and his sister, who still lived at home, with two babies.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were so wonderful to me. And they adored the children. And my mother-in-law, she said, you take care of the babies and let me play with them. But I don't want any help with the cleaning and the cooking and whatnot. And I said, how about the shopping? I would love to get out and go, okay, I'll let you do that. And she was so sweet.
Oh, my gosh.
And eventually he found a job about an hour from Chicago in the western suburbs with Barbara Green, who made equipment for road paving and so forth. Very big family company, wonderful benefits and everything else. And so we moved to Aurora, Illinois. And that's where we stayed.
And that's where you got your involved in your Shelties. And you were telling me that you handled confirmation. You handled professionally.
Oh, yeah. I got my license.
And what breeds were you licensed for?
Well, they didn't do that back then. I was an assistant to Ed Carver, who showed lots of giant breeds, Pyrenees, and they all outweighed me and everything. It was just, but if he got something smaller in, but I exercised and cling poop and all that stuff. Friends would ask me, would you please take my dog? My dog loves you and you're so gentle with them and blah, blah, blah. They look so good with you in the ring. And I had Sammy's and I had Joan's Rotties, all of her Rotties I did. I just got a note from her at Christmas.
Oh, my gosh.
She's 91 now.
Yes.
She has judged all over the world. And she said, I'm so glad to know your new email address because I cannot stand the idea of losing you somewhere. And your forever friend, Joan. We went together to the Rottweiler Nationals in New Jersey. I took my favorite one, Lexi, and I took Best Opposite Sex with her.
At the National. Nice.
Yes. And, her dogs were lovely and wonderful, the kind of temperaments we worked for. And good hips, everything done. So I had an English setter. I had a lot of dogs for Canada because I went to Canada every summer and everyone wanted a Canadian championship.
Right.
And you didn't have to defeat but one dog. And I had a little old lady who raised miniature pincers, and she wanted a championship on her dog the worst way. And it was a nice little dog. It was no world beater, but it was acceptable. And I said, well, I can't promise you'll get a championship, but we'll do our best. So I took Moondog. I took him up, and I had this little motorhome, Class C. So I was sleeping up here, and he slept in the sleeping bag with me because he didn't have any hair. And I used to worry about him. I'd say, my feet really stink bad. Are you alive down there? And it's a little thing. He would come, like up, and go, give me a little lick on the chin and turn around and go right back down.
Back down to the bottom.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
So we went to 4 weekends or 5 weekends or something. And finally, we were at the point where he could finish this weekend if he just beat one dog. Well, there were no other Minpins around. And I didn't think about borrowing one from someone that wasn't as good. Because that probably would have backfired anyway. Mm. So I went and I thought, God. And they do the groups, and if you don't go in the groups, you lose your points. So that was a bitch. So I went in there, and he finally placed in the group.
There you go.
The last shot.
And that finished him.
Yep.
That's awesome.
That finished him.
That's awesome.
I had a greyhound. I taught the big dogs to lunge. So I had a horse for a while there, and I had a lunge group. And the big ones, I'd take them out and lunge them. You can't let them lose condition, and I was on the road for 3 weeks or something like that. They can go down fast.
Very good.
So I had huge crates,
right,
in this little tiny thing, but we did good, and I got to show my own dogs and finished all kinds of Canadian championships. Mm-hmm. And I finally got embarrassed and stopped entering obedience trials because nobody could beat me.
And so you were competing in obedience with your own Shelties.
Yeah.
And so tell us, you spent 20 years involved with Shelties, and you were telling me earlier that you, with each of your breeds, so you were involved with Shelties, you were involved with Vizslas, and now you're involved with Mini American Shepherds. And we'll get to each of them, but in the Shelties, you were winning high-end trial. You had the picture you showed me with the one little dog with like 100 trophies around her.
Yeah. 400.
Oh my gosh.
Over 400. Oh, she had somewhere around 36 or more high-end trials.
Wow.
And she was just amazing, and she loved it. It was her life, and she was like, you know, an arm and a leg.
Attached.
Yes. Nothing bothered her. She was just a perfect, perfect dog. Mm-hmm. You're a nice boy, too, though, aren't you? Yes. This is the one that was lost.
Oh.
And was, for a week, he was lost in the forest.
Oh, my gosh. This is...
We had a terrible accident that I still have post-traumatic stress from and everything. For a week, he was out there.
And this is Lori's mini American Shepherd that's come over to say hi to us.
Yeah. I got him back, and with no ill effects except that he likes me to be in his line of vision.
Yeah, right.
He's there or in the other room watching. He's never underfoot, but he never takes his eyes off me. And he likes to ride in the car. But at first, he would get up and pace. He doesn't do that anymore.
Very good.
But... And he could leave him. He has no separation anxiety,
right.
Which is very good because that's a pain to live with.
Mm-hmm.
But a wonderful dog. And he is 1 inch over.
I was going to say he's a little
standard.
Big. Yeah. Okay, so you had Shelties. You did ridiculous amount of obedience winning. And then you acquired Vizslas. And we were just looking at your pictures of your Vizslas.
Yeah.
So tell us about Pistol, because I actually knew of Pistol. So tell us about Pistol, because that was a heck of a dog.
Yes, well, when I married Bill, I have to go back a little. Then it'll make more sense. When I married Bill, all he could talk about was his old German Shepherd from when he was younger. Not a kid, but he was married then. And I said, no, we don't have room or time for a German Shepherd. I was working 12 to 14 hours a day with the National Federation of Independent Business, which is a fabulous organization, and trying to make enough money so I could maybe possibly retire. And I had already seen him with that I knew that he was not going to be a shepherd person. He just doesn't have that. He doesn't speak to dogs. He talks at them, but he doesn't ever get any feedback. My dogs, they're terribly rude. They have no respect for him. Most of the time, he comes in the house and he does things like open the door and bursting in, and they go to say hello, and he says, get out of the way! Ooh, and you expect them to like you, do you? So anything that comes up, then they go over it on the corner there where he puts his shoes and socks on, and there's an ottoman, and they piss on it.
Oh, jeez.
And they have been
securely
smacked several times. Well, finally, I have finally gotten them over that.
So Vizslas were the breed of choice to move forward with because they were a little easier to work with?
Well, the Vizslas, I had handled a number of sporting dogs. And they're sweet things.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing, but they don't have much of a option goal. They just do as little as possible and wag their tails a lot. They get interested in doing the hunting thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I was teaching obedience, the advanced class, and I had a Vizsla come in, working in open, a male, and he was a bench champion. And he was a delightful dog. Vizslas are different. It's the only sporting dog I've worked with probably 10 different breeds. The only breed that I have found that you can train yourself. You don't have to put a shock collar on them.
Mm-hmm.
You go out and you teach them, stop. And they say, okay. They're just so agreeable.
Mm-hmm.
And they're easy coat care and they're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a lot of genetic problems.
Mm-hmm.
We fought with epilepsy for quite a while, but otherwise they're quite healthy. And I told him, he said that he wanted a shepherd, and I said, no, you can't do that, but I will introduce you to a Welsh Springer, which is also very nice.
Lovely dog.
They haven't ruined them yet.
No, they're a lovely breed.
Or a Vizsla. And he said, what's a Vizsla? And I said, it's a Hungarian pointer. And he said, oh. And I said, as a matter of fact, there's a show in Scottsdale in 2 weeks. We will go and I will introduce you. Well, he took one look at the Vizsla and said, oh, I'm in love.
That's the one.
Yeah.
So to make sure everybody's following the timeline, you were in Chicago with the Shelties and now you've moved to Scottsdale with your new husband. Yeah. And that was the start of the Vizslas. And where did Pistol fall in the acquisition of Vizslas, I guess?
Oh, he wanted a bird dog is right. What he had told
right.
me. So I introduced him to Huntess,
mm-hmm.
and we got a motorhome,
mm-hmm.
and we went to the Huntess, and he had so much fun. And he actually trained Katie,
okay.
and she was a willful bitch, too. She was not my best temperamented Vizsla. She was a rotten little thing. But most of the time she stayed and she minded me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he got her junior hunter and actually eventually he got his senior hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But he lost his temper when she wasn't doing quite what he wanted and he put a collar on her and nailed her. And that was the last time. From then on, if she spotted somebody else on point, she turned around and went the opposite direction. So there was no way he could ever get a master's.
Right.
Oh, Pistol also got his master's.
Mm-hmm. He was. And tell us, he was...
So,
dual champion, master hunter, won the national field championship for the Vizslas?
Twice? Yeah.
So
and
he's...
won more AKC mm-hmm. trials mm-hmm. than anybody ever.
In the Vizslas.
And what the funny, he went to Florida for one of the nationals,
mm-hmm.
and Ellis went down a week early. And
he was handled by Ellis Hers.
Yes, after he finished his regular, Ellis got his amateur, and he was with Ellis
campaign.
From then on, yes. Mm-hmm. But he went, he entered the American
Field?
Yeah, American Field, which was the week before.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he knew right. all the people.
Right.
He walked in, he said, you should have heard those assholes. He said, what are you doing with that silly red dog? And he said, mm-hmm. you'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
And he won.
The American Field Trial?
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Incredibly, he called me up and he said, we won. I said, you gotta be kidding me. I said, I hope you stuck their heads in the toilet. And he said, just about.
Oh, my gosh. American Field being a very competitive field trial venue.
Oh, yeah. That gives money.
Gives
which
money.
Which is why Bill Gibbons went there.
And dominated primarily by English setters and English pointers.
Yes, that don't even look like English setter.
Not by the ones we have.
Right.
And that's, I think, one of the great things about some of the, we call them the continental versatile hunting breeds, right? The Vizsla, the wire-haired pointer, the short-haired pointer, that you can have and do have dual champions who are good-looking, amazing bird dogs.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All my puppies, I raised a litter about every year and a half. Katie had several litters and then the puppy Dancer. Who was very, very pretty, finished easily. Got her junior hunter, but she wasn't really interested in birds. She didn't inherit the right genes for that.
It's amazing what passes and what doesn't, isn't
it? So I said, you don't have to do that. If you don't love it, we'll do something else. And so she got her CDX, and she was a good dog and a good mom and had beautiful babies. And every puppy went to a home where it would be a personal gun dog.
Nice.
And nobody would buy them, the big handlers would buy them because Gabe was not purebred.
Oh,
that
okay.
was the big...
The rumor.
Rumor.
Mm-hmm.
But Pistol was not mismarked in any way.
No.
And so there he was. And he did have some bitches come in. He had some really, really nice dogs, but they had wonderful homes and they were wonderful hunting companions and nobody else was really interested in breed
right.
and that was fine with me
right.
because the bitches were all sold on spay neuter contracts.
Oh, interesting.
And there's only two intact bitches from all of my miniature
American Shepherds.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the transition from Vizslas to miniature American Shepherds and you were involved with helping found the breed.
I guess so. I was one of the first ones in. That was Paul and Karen.
Okay.
And our friend Buddy Toadvin from Louisiana. What a character he is.
So how did that come about?
Well, I came here. I retired here.
And you're here in Cave Junction, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. And The first thing I did, of course, was try and find if there was a kennel club, and yes, there was, and who was in it, and I went to a meeting and announced that I was new in the community, but I was a handler, mm-hmm. and I raised blah, blah, and they all accepted me with open arms and came up to me afterwards and says, I have a...
Bichon?
Yes, she raised Bichons.
Okay.
And I...
And what year was this?
I came in 98.
Okay. All right. So you've been here in Southern Oregon almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years.
Wow.
And I said, I'm really, really pretty much retired. You know, I'm not going to do much of that anymore. And I'm too busy trying to put my house together and so forth. And this crazy buddy told me, I'm going to skip all that because it doesn't matter. He was coming here. And there was a gal that had bred her Vizsla bitch, and Buddy had Vizslas, mm-hmm. had bred her bitch to Pistol. And she lived in Florida, and she was coming up here.
Okay.
And I said, wonderful. She said she was going to be looking for a place to get out of the heat and so mm-hmm. forth. And I said, fine. I talked to my realtor and everything else, and here she comes. Well, it turns out that she and Buddy had this thing going over oh. the phone. They ended up getting married. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, Paul was best man, and Jane didn't know anybody else, so I was maid of honor. And then we had drinks over at Bodeving's when they lived in Grants Pass. Mm-hmm. And Paul said, you want to see my babies? And I thought, you know how it is. Mm-hmm. Everybody who has puppies wants you to evaluate their litters. And I'm thinking that a dozen St. Bernards, which is not my favorite breed to begin with, God forbid. And so we went in, opened up the door to the family room and went in. And from across the room comes this little pogo stick. Boing, boing, boing. I said, my God, what is that? It looks like an Aussie, but it can't be. And Paul said, yes, it's a miniature Aussie.
So the miniature American Shepherd.
Yes. I know, you thought that was funny. So I said, oh my God, I've got to have one. Because I was looking for something. Mm-hmm. I was done with Vizsla's, Pistol was mm-hmm. gone. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what am I going to do? Sheldies, they ruined. They're now barking hairballs. And
yes, Karen told me I wasn't supposed to bring that topic up.
Oh, no, I don't protect him. I wouldn't have another one. These, at least now, he's got more hair than he should.
Yeah, you might be a throwback son.
But not much.
Right.
And everybody loves it because it's so glamorous. Mm. Well, that's what they did with the Sheltie. They weren't getting enough wins in the working group. Mm. All the big impressive dogs won, and nobody paid any attention to the little Sheltie. So they bred for the terrier temperament that bounced up and down and barked. And they run the fence and bark. And they answer the doorbell and bark. And they never shut their mouths.
Mm.
What happened to the working dog who said, hi, Mom, what do you want me to do today?
Right.
And all my Shelties were like that. They followed me around waiting for me to give them a job.
Right. So the mini American Shepherd was a good solution.
Yes, I thought it was definitely needed. How many small, convenient-sized mm-hmm. working or herding dogs are there to choose
right.
from?
Right.
Certainly not Border Collies. They'll run the walls. There are very few people that should own a Border Collie.
Yeah, they are a very high-drive dog.
But they're wonderful. I have always wanted one, and I have never had the time to devote to one because they take up your life. If I'm going to have a dog, I'm going to make that dog happy because it's making me happy. And it's only fair.
Absolutely. And so Karen tells me that, and I assume with the mini American Shepherd, that you discovered agility at age 70.
Yeah, probably a little before that. But somebody said, well, I found Terry McCullough training mm-hmm. down there. And after I disavowed her of the thought that she knew twice as much as I did, we got along fine. I told her, I said, I will pay my money because I need a place to work. And mm-hmm. setting up all this crap at home is too much. Well, I sold all my stuff to Karen's mom. But I had a full agility course. And
oh, wow.
Both of these. He has his GO, his graduate open.
Okay.
And is ready for utility.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't go to shows anymore. Mm. The stress thing is just my comfort zones shrunk down like this. Mm. And that one is also ready. Except that he can't hear.
Oh.
I mean, he runs out, and you call him, and he turns, and he's like, what?
Will he do hand signals?
Say that again? And the hand signal, if he looks away, and one thing different about these and Shelties, Shelties watch you, always, good ones. These dogs have to see everything that's going on.
Okay.
That's the herding dog thing. And Shelties are rotten herders. I mean, very few of them have any instinct left at all. These do.
Right.
So I have had to face the fact that the other thing is, in the accident, I didn't break any bones, but the airbag burst against my head and caused severe hearing loss, which the insurance would not pay for my hearing aids because I couldn't prove it, and also affected my balance.
Yeah, in her ear.
I didn't realize it until I was out raking and cleaning in the yard. I bailed off that retaining wall and landed.
Oh, my gosh.
And I didn't break any bones then either.
So, good. Strong
good
bones.
For me.
Lots of
strong,
calcium.
Lots of cheese. So, anyway, I said, that's it. So he has one leg on his GO, and neither of them will be able to get their utility titles. But that's okay. I have won enough titles over the years.
You've been done.
I don't
and
think
you
it's
still have fun training with them.
Yeah, they love to go out and screw around. And the black dog, he's really a fun dog. He's 13 now.
Yeah, I could tell he was an older fellow.
And he loves to swim. And in the summer, he goes swimming in the pond every day. Mm. He goes out and he swims around in circles and comes out and rolls on the grass and smiles and goes and pees on some things and turns around and goes back in and does it again. Just he's so much fun. He's just a really fun dog. And he's a grand champion from Mascusa, the Miniature Australian Shepherd Club of the USA.
Okay. Well, different than the Miniature American Shepherd.
After I got this puppy from Bodevings, I found out that, yes, I could register it. And all of my others were registered with NASCA or Mascusa. So his titles say from...
So his titles actually predate
from
the
Mascusa. Oh, yeah. Everything. AKC registration. Everything I did predates.
Okay.
And all my puppies were registered. And I did all of the health tests and everything. And I was just absolutely ecstatic when they got a test for PRA.
Right.
Because, you know, all the herding dogs, it's been there in their lines for 20 generations, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's clear. My Betsy, who was his mother, she finished and she was like 15 inches and sweetest temperament, got her CDX. I had her spayed after she was through having babies. And I found out that her eyes were starting to go. But I had taken her into the ophthalmologist every year.
Mm-hmm.
She was now eligible to go in AKC performance
right,
events.
But not the confirmation.
Yeah, there was quite a period there, mm-hmm. though, where if you had them neutered.
Right.
And I had my other boy. He's intact. Mm-hmm. But I had that one neutered
mm-hmm.
because he was just beating the crap out of this one and lording it over him and so forth. And I said, nobody's using you anyway.
Right.
You're done. You got your thing.
Right.
This one got his grand championship. And judges used to stop me at the shows and say, how come I've never seen that dog in my ring? And I say, because it is a miniature Aussie.
Mm-hmm.
My God, it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I said, he's this much over. Well, then he grew a little more, and now he's this much over.
Right.
But, you know, if you go to the AKC website, mm-hmm. they have pictures,
mm-hmm.
and the one in an oval that is a head study
for the Mini American Shepherd
is him.
Is the blue dog.
Wow.
Very cool.
They got me. But, you know, people are so dumb. They breed to their friends' dogs instead of the best dog.
Yeah.
And he has sired two litters. And they also seem to think that every puppy he sires is going to be 19, 20 inches tall. Mm,
right.
You don't know much about genetics, do you? And it just kills me. Anyway,
so
I kept the best and I neutered the rest. And then I had stopped raising puppies. These dogs are now 12. And she wanted another puppy. So I sent her to my friend in Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And she got Casey from her. Because I said, I'm not going to have any more, but this is a good breeder, and you'll be happy.
So you're talking now about 70 years since that first trip to Westminster. Been an awful lot of years in dogs.
Yeah. Right? And my parents never did have to take care of my dogs. In fact, they were so annoyed with me because I wasn't graduating from high school. I quit in the middle of the year and went to Stevens College to get away from the love life disaster. I knew I couldn't stay there and keep up my defenses. Anyway, that just wasn't going to happen.
What is really, really interesting to me is that, as I said, 70 years later, and three different breeds actively involved, national level, national caliber placements with all the breeds that you've been involved with. What kept you going? What kept you coming back?
The dogs. I can't imagine life without dogs.
Well, thank you so much, Lori. I really appreciate you joining us. A lot of fun.
It's been fun for me. Recollections are always wonderful.
Absolutely. And you'd do it all again, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I do a few things different, but most of the time I would.
Hey, Pure Dog Talk listeners. We are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. And Allison has her tip of the week for us today. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
I am awesome. And I understand that we are talking about proper ear cleaning today.
Yeah. You know, ear cleaning is one of those things that I think people either overdo or underdo. So I just wanted to kind of give my tip of the week about that.
I love it. Dirty ears are so disgusting.
They are. So one of my things is, you know, just like you hear about a baby, is that really you don't want to stick anything smaller in your dog's ear than your elbow, right? So you don't really want to be just like going in as deep as you can and just going to town, because the skin in there is so sensitive to like getting little nicks and tears in it, even just from swabbing around. So I do like to use different kinds of commercially available ear cleaners because I feel that they have been formulated. They've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars coming up with a formula that's really going to work for us. So I start there. I start with actually using an ear cleaner. I then go on and I like to use either cosmetic cotton pads. I find that those work really well for like your bigger dogs, like dogs that are higher than the knee, I always say. And then I will gently use a Q-tip when I am cleaning a smaller dog's ear, right? Because I have man hands. So by the time you get the cotton pad on my finger, you can't get near the dog's ear with it, really. So that's where I start. And, you know, once a week, I want to clean the debris out of my dog's ear, the debris that I can see. So I'm not diving right in there. The other thing that I think mystifies a lot of people is plucking the hair out of the ear. So whatever your opinion is on that you should never pluck the hair or that you want it just like as bald as a Brazilian wax there, somewhere in between might be the sweet spot. So my rule of thumb is, you know, I show a lot of Portuguese water dogs and poodles things that do grow a lot of hair in their ear, is that I want there to be air circulation. Some dogs are very sensitive and you actually cause more of a problem by improperly plucking the hair out of the ear or by plucking too aggressively in one session. So then you know, when you pull the hair, just like an overzealous waxing job, you could get, you know, a little bit of blood coming to the surface. And that area of the ear is just going to get infected quicker than if you had left it alone. So I like a delicate balance of just looking and using common sense and making sure that, you know, you can see skin, you can see the actual ear skin. That means that if you can see the skin, there is some air circulation getting down into there. And I think that, you know, you need that to A, properly clean the ear, and then B, if you do need to apply ear medication, you have a place that the ear medication can get to instead of just being soaked in by that clump of hair that's sitting there.
Right. And I think for a lot of, you know, your drop-eared breeds, you get all kinds of infection in that ear when it stays damp. It just then becomes a breeding ground for yeast and bacteria and grossness.
You know, you're exactly right. And especially when the humidity in our air changes, right? Like where I live, we didn't have a dry winter, you know, snow with some like drier temperatures. We had just a rainy, rainy winter. And I can tell by my dog's ears, you're exactly right. You lift it up and there is more moisture in there. So my last little thing that I like to do is when I am bathing my dogs, I do like to use a little bit of an actual detergent or a baby shampoo, and I like to actually clean the ear leather with that baby shampoo, because I find that we shampoo the outside of the ear and the ends of the ear, but maybe a lot of people don't do the actual inside ear leather. So I'm not talking about the ear canal, but just the inside ear leather. I like that to be really clean as well. And I do find that that is one of the areas, you know, you'll flip up a dog's ear and you'll think, wow, but the ear canal is actually clean. It's just the actual ear leather has some debris on it.
Right. And I think one of the things I always talk to people about when they're bathing dogs is just be really aware. Try not to get a gallon of water down that ear canal, because then you got to dry it out. And it goes back to the same thing. Wet ears are a place that you can start with an ear infection.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And, you know, even if I have somebody that I think is having problems, like a dog that's having problems, or a new person that maybe I'm teaching them how to bath a dog, I will suggest that, you know, maybe they put a little cotton ball in the ear, just like with people. And it seems simple, but I mean, it does really work. And even sometimes it works, because if you notice that the cotton ball is getting soaking wet and you're changing them, then obviously you are getting too much water in that area.
Exactly. It's a great, great tool to practice, everybody. Keep your ears dry. That's sort of like keep your powder dry, but keep your ears dry. Thank you, Allison. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Laura.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk, brought to you by the Aramedia Group, publisher of ShowSite Magazine, your home for purebred dogs.